Long time ago, we started a series of trying to summarize each of the books of the Bible. We've gotten up to the book of Acts after quite a while, because I don't do this every week, just every once in a while. The book of Acts itself is a continuation of Luke's earlier account, which we know as the book of Luke. We start with Acts chapter 1, and starting with verse 1, Acts chapter 1, starting with verse 1, it says, "The first account I composed, Theophilus, about all that Jesus began to do and reach and teach, until the day when he was taken up to heaven, after he had by the Holy Spirit given orders to the apostles whom he had chosen. To these he also presented himself alive after his suffering, by many convincing proofs, appearing to them over a period of 40 days, and speaking of things concerning the kingdom of God." He mentions here both that it was an early account. He also mentions this is addressed to Theophilus, which the book of Luke was also addressed to. And also we know from a little bit later, we're going to talk about, there's several sections that are basically the we sections of Acts. The pronouns are used, talking about things, especially about Paul, talking about things he had done. But there's certain sections from Acts 16, starting from verse 1 to 17. We won't take time to read all these. Also Acts 20, starting with verse 7 to chapter 21, verse 18. And then from 27 to verse 17, 27 verse 1 to 28 verse 16. Those sections of Acts, the pronouns change to we. So we gather from that that Luke is with Paul at those times. And by matching these up with the letters is why we conclude that Luke wrote Acts as well as Luke. But also there are other historical accounts that gives us this information. So even though the author is not named, the continuation and the style makes it very clear that Acts and Luke are both written by the same author. The title of the book has basically always been there. From the various earliest Greek manuscripts all the way through, has always been titled either as Acts or as Acts of the Apostles. And like the book of Luke, knowing that Luke is the author here, Luke would interview eyewitnesses to events. But here in Acts, he also is able to include his own personal witness. But it's interesting, Luke is very thorough, Luke is very detailed-oriented. He even cites records. Just for a moment, take a brief look at Acts chapter 15. Again, we won't take time to read it. But take a look at Acts chapter 15, and starting with verse 23. It's not that he just says that they wrote a letter. He actually quotes the letter in Acts. So in verse 23, it says in Acts 15, "And they sent this by letter by them, the apostles and brethren who are elders to the brethren in Antioch and Syria and Cilicia, who are from the Gentiles, greetings." And it goes on to give us the actual letter. Another case is in Acts chapter 23. Acts chapter 23 and verse 26. Here again is another letter. This is a letter that was written by Felix. And it says, "Claudius Lysias to the most excellent governor Felix, greetings." And it goes on to write a letter to the emperor. So Luke had access to these particular letters. He gave us copies of them. Why is that important? Because these are historical documents. While we might not have the actual letters today, one would assume that those letters were available for somebody to go find and look at. These are part of the evidence that Acts is actually real. It's not a made-up story. We also have in the book of Acts, one of the interesting things, we don't often think about it, there are 24 speeches in the book of Acts. It's a book of 28 chapters, and we got 24 of them. 24 speeches listed in it. We have a lot of the early lessons, the early sermons. Now, we might not have the entire sermon. Most likely what Luke is giving us is a summary, especially if we consider how the Gospels were laid out. And we have Jesus' talks, and we realize from looking at the various Gospels that we probably have a summary of each of these. We got the critical sections of it. But still, we have the early speeches. We have the early sermons for most of these. As far as dating the letter, well, because Acts ends with Paul's first imprisonment, and it doesn't tell us the outcome, nor does it even hint what we know comes later after Paul's life, from Paul's letters and from other things that happened as well. We basically can pinpoint that the book of Acts was written somewhere a lot, roughly about AD 62, AD 63. We know this fairly well because there's no mention of Nero's persecution, even though Paul, in a lot of the letters, was talking about it coming up. That persecution occurred in AD 64. And we don't have it mentioned in Acts. Paul's death is in AD 68. This ends well before his actual death. Or the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, which again was things that were hinted at and talked about both in the Gospels and a little bit in Acts. None of those are mentioned. Because of that, we know, we're quite confident that the book of Acts was written before those things happened. Now, exactly why it stopped at the place it stopped, we really don't know. It doesn't say. And there's no other hint as to why it stopped at that particular time and place. But as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that's interesting about Acts is the number of things that are given that are verifiable. There are people who have been converted to Christianity by studying the book of Acts, and there have been people that say, I'm going to prove the Bible wrong. We're going to take Acts and I'm going to show you that it's not right. The problem is those people end up convincing themselves no, Acts is right. For instance, Acts mentions over 80 different places, geographical places. And what's interesting is he always uses exactly the right term at that period of time for that particular place. You know, we have towns around the country, we have places around the country which changes names, which changes, you know, we're in Nebraska. It used to be a territory at one time. Now it's called a state. But getting exactly the right term at the right time makes it interesting. And getting the relationship between places exactly right. Acts is very accurate in that particular thing. Over 100 people are named in the book of Acts. We don't think about it, how many names appear in there. Not just names of Christians, but also names of governors, names of politicians, names of leading citizens. Each of these are, again, given precisely the right title. There have been times when people argue and say, no, that's not the right title for that period. And eventually we find some historical document, no, Luke had it right after all. We just forgot because we're looking 2,000 years back. And we miss the points. So Acts is a very important book in our, from our point of view, because it's one of these ones that prove how correct, how accurate God's word is. Now, as if you talk about the purpose of the book, Acts traces the development of the church from Jesus' resurrection. It provides basically the historical framework for the letters that then follow, that the apostles, we can hang the letters on those, we then understand the relationship between the letters. Try to imagine, try to figure out what's going on just having Paul's letters and not knowing the book of Acts. Now, there's little brief mentions of this and that going on, and it'd be very confusing. And try to piece that together would be very hard without that book of Acts to give us the framework from which is going on. But it also basically tells us about the first generation of Christians. It covers about 30 years, just a little bit over 30 years of time. But it shows us how the church transitions from a religion that is born among the Jewish people into a worldwide religion that is for everyone. At least we're finally getting rain. And it also details for us how people were taught and converted to Christianity. This is a book about conversions. It talks about it all the way through. Different types of people, different methods, different ways people were introduced to the gospel and brought to Christianity. This is a book to study about how to teach other people, because there's a wide variety of examples given. And so we're going to talk about as an outline. It's not going to be a very long lesson this evening. But we're going to go through the book in a summary fashion. If we want it, I want to name one other thing before I get there. Let's go to Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. There is a verse in Acts chapter 1 that basically then becomes the framework for the whole book. And that's verse 8 of Acts chapter 1. And I'm going to go start, here we go. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses, both in Jerusalem and in all of Judea and Samaria, and even to the remotest part of the earth. Using that, this is the way Acts is laid out. It starts in Jerusalem, it then goes to Judea and Samaria, and then it talks about what happens in the rest of the world. So starting with that, in Acts chapter 1 through 7, the first seven chapters is about the church establishment in Jerusalem and how they were witnesses to Christ in Jerusalem. Acts chapter 1 deals with the time period immediately after the resurrection, the 40 days basically after the resurrection up until the day of Pentecost. And Jesus' ascension is also recorded in Acts chapter 1. Also, we find in Acts chapter 1, they found a replacement for Judas, and Matthias is selected as an apostle. This probably occurred roughly about AD 30. Acts chapter 2 then tells us about the establishment of the church, again in the same year. And this is, gives us the first gospel sermon, the effect upon the Jews, the large conversion that occurred, and the church being established. Acts chapter 3, roughly AD 30, 31, talks about the growth of the church. They're still in Jerusalem. People are still concentrated there. There are more people being converted. It's spreading. It's very popular with the people. But then we get into Acts chapter 4 and 5, and we find that the leaders especially are getting very nervous about this growing, from their point of view, sect, and try to take a hand of stopping the growth, commanding and ordering them not to teach anymore, not to do these things, and the apostles' refusal. So we start to see a building of resistance to what's going on. Obviously, with such rapid growth, by the time we get to chapter 6, we find there's some growing pains. In Acts chapter 6, it's still about roughly AD 30, 31, as most people's guesses. We find that they have problems with making sure that the needy, the widows among the congregation, are all getting equally taken care of. And so there is the organization of the church. They're organizing themselves better. The apostles tell the church to pick out men who basically become deacons for the church. Then, starting with chapter 6, verse 9, through the end of chapter 7, we find the focus is now on one of those men who was selected as deacon, and that's Stephen. He was very eloquent. He was very challenging to the Jewish people, and he met strong resistance. And we have basically his lesson. It's one of the longest speeches recorded for us. It's basically, it takes up of all of chapter 7 for the most part. And he goes through the Jewish history and shows that these people always resisted God. And the result was his death at the end of the chapter. And so he becomes the first martyr for Christ. But the story doesn't end there, because with that then becomes then a spread of Christianity. Because of the persecution that arises with the death of Stephen, the church then scatters. In Acts chapter 8, we'll just take a moment to read verses 1 through 4. So Saul was hardly in agreement with putting him to death, and on that day a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout all the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. Some devout men buried Stephen and made loud lamentation over him, but Saul began ravaging the church, entering house after house, and dragging off men and women, and he would put them in prison. The persecution now becomes solid, it becomes active. Not just saying, don't do this. People are actually being put in prison. People are being put to death because of it. And the church now scatters out of Jerusalem into the surrounding regions. We're moving out from Jerusalem. Now it's in Judea. It's in Samaria. And now we focus on another of the men that were selected originally to help take care of the church. And this time it's Philip. In Acts chapter 8, starting with verse 5 down to verse 40, is the story about Philip. He preaches in Samaria, and the events that occurred there are recorded for us in Acts chapter 8, verses 5 through 21. So from Jerusalem now we go up to Samaria, and that's where Philip then does his teaching. But then also he's called upon to teach the Ethiopian eunuch. We know the Ethiopian eunuch was on his way to Gaza. We don't know exactly how far he got. But somewhere down in this region, Philip was brought to teach the Ethiopian eunuch. We have the record of his conversion. When that conversion was done at the end of Acts chapter 8, it says Philip was then sent as a totus. And then later on, he moves back up and continues to work in the Samaria region. And that's where we find him even 20 years later. He concentrates in preaching in that particular region. We then move on to Acts chapter 9, and we're probably about AD 30. Sometimes you don't think about it. We're only like 4 years, roughly, from the start of the church. Now, sometimes, some parts of the Bible, we read through it and we don't realize how much time is being covered because it's such a summary. There's other parts of the Bible where so many things are recorded, we don't realize how little time has actually taken place. So this is roughly about AD 30, and it's a record in Acts chapter 9 about Saul's conversion. So from verses 1 through 19 is talking about how he was converted to Christianity, how Christ met him on the road to Damascus and convinced him that he is to be his apostle. We don't see it in Acts, but we know from a letter that Paul wrote to the Galatians. In Galatians chapter 1 and in verse 17, we're just going to jump over there just for a little bit. Even though it's not in the book of Acts, just to keep the history straight. Galatians chapter 1, verse 17. Paul says, "Nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went away to Arabia and returned once more to Damascus." So from Damascus, Paul says, I did not go down to Jerusalem. From Damascus, he goes off to Arabia somewhere, then comes back to Damascus again and starts preaching in that area. And Acts chapter 9, verses 20 to 22, given the time he says he basically spends 3 years in Arabia. So now we're up to AD 36, roughly. for chapter 9, 20 to 22. He's preaching in Damascus, and then he also then goes down to Jerusalem in AD 37, roughly, to Jerusalem, and spends a bit of time preaching in that area as well. From Galatians chapter 1, verse 21, we find that after that, he goes off to Cilicia. Galatians chapter 1, and in verse 21, it says, "Then I went into the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and I was still unknown by sight to the churches of Judea that were in Christ." So while most of the churches down here did not know Paul, he had gone back up and was teaching up in this region. So up above Antioch, and eventually he's brought to the church in Antioch by Barnabas from that region. The story in Acts then shifts from Paul to Peter. And don't know exactly when to pinpoint this time. It's probably somewhere between 35 and 40. There's some overlap with the story of Paul. But in this period of time, Peter has now had gone up, Philip was in Samaria, had gone up there briefly up there. But the story continues on with him being in Lydda, where he heals Ananias. And that's in Acts chapter 9, verses 32 to 35. He then goes from there to the coast, out to Joppa, to raise Dorcas from the dead. Acts chapter 9, verses 46 to 43. He's then called upon to talk to Cornelius, who was the Gentile. That was up in the Caesarea area. So he moves up there as well. And Acts chapter 10 then deals with the conversion of Cornelius and his household. A very significant event, because up until now, most of the teaching, all the teaching, has been with either Jews or Jewish converts. This is the first one that actually deals with a Gentile, even though Cornelius was one who was a sympathizer with the Jews. Which then leads to Acts chapter 11, the first 18 verses there, 1 through 18. Peter then has to make a defense about his teaching Gentiles. People were not at all pleased, even though Peter was one of the apostles, they weren't pleased that he was actually approaching Gentiles. They saw it basically as an exclusive religion for Jews. This is where the mold finally gets broken. Then we go to the remainder of Acts chapter 11, and we find the church in Antioch being formed, and being, even though it's really outside of Judea and Samaria, now we're up into Syria. There's a church in Antioch. This is the one that's its real significance is this is where the name Christian was first assigned. And so that would be about AD 43. Chapter 12 is about Herod. We're going back into Judea again. And Herod has taken up the idea that he can, since it was the leaders didn't like the Jews, or didn't like Christians, he wanted to get more popular with the Jews. He decided to arrest James. He had James put to death. That was the first apostle to die of the apostles after Jesus' death. And then Herod himself dies as God strikes him dead. And that's Acts chapter 12. But Jesus said it was not just to Judea and Samaria, it was going to go out to the rest of the world. And so starting with basically chapter 13 through the end of Acts, we see the spread of Christianity going through all the world. Each journey, for the most part, starts in Antioch in Syria. Usually you'll see that in the scriptures very clearly being spelled out that we're talking about Antioch of Syria because there are multiple Antiochs. Just like there's, we have to be very careful when we start talking about Springfield and some other names like that. There's too many other places like that. So we have to talk about the region name to make sure we understand which one we're talking about. Each of the journeys basically started in Antioch of Syria. The first journey of Paul starts in Acts chapter 13 and 4 and goes through Acts chapter 14. It probably covers about roughly AD 45 to 48. He goes from Cyprus, starts in Antioch, he goes down to the island of Cyprus. That itself is an interesting place. They talk about there's 100 cities in Cyprus. Works their way across the island of Cyprus. They then take a ship from Paphos up to Perga in that region. And then basically go across Asia Minor. So we go to Antioch of Pisidia. We get down to Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, and then they work their way back and make a journey back, eventually coming back to Antioch of Syria and giving the report of what happened in that trip. So that just covers just two chapters. But we're covering about 3 years of history, or 4 years. Then there was, after they were back, and it's probably around about AD 49. So in other words, the church has been around now for roughly about 19 years. Big controversy is building up. It started with Peter converting the Gentiles. But it's now building stronger because Paul's actively working in Gentile regions. And there were people who were basically coming out of Jerusalem, going through various regions, saying that people had to follow the law of Moses. In particular, they had to become Jews. They had to be circumcised. Paul and Barnabas opposed them. Acts chapter 15, from verse 1 through 35, is about the meeting in Jerusalem. Why in Jerusalem? A lot of times they call it the Jerusalem Council. Jerusalem wasn't dictating to the churches. The problem was these false teachers were coming from Jerusalem. And so they went back to the source and say, hey, they didn't have to even accuse anybody. They just went back and said, here's what's happening. And the problem element popped up on their own. And so they had a big, huge discussion about, did God want the Gentiles saved? And the conclusion was, which is a very good thing to read through, because we don't see God actually directly answering them. These people solved it by using what happened. They used the inferences from what was occurring to see this was what God wanted. And so a letter was sent out to tell the other churches, hey, we didn't authorize these people to go out and teach this doctrine. This is not what's being taught in Jerusalem. We're not supporting it. And we didn't authorize these people to go out and teach this thing. That letter was then carried by Paul through the other churches, Antioch being the first place, but it wasn't just carried there. Paul carried it around all over the place to show the Christians out there that when you run across these type of people, this is not what the church is teaching. Despite what they may be claiming, well, Jerusalem says this, and here's a letter from Jerusalem that says it the other way. So now we have then the second journey of Paul that starts in Acts chapter 15, verse 36. So roughly about AD 50 to 53. And the numbers are kind of loose because we just don't know, did it start in the fall of the year or the spring of the year, that type of thing. So numbers are a little bit on the loose side. But here the concentration is that, again, we started in Antioch of Syria, but instead of sailing off, there was a disagreement. Barnabas ended up going back to Cyprus, but Paul takes the overland journey. And he takes off from Syria, goes back up to Tarsus, his area, and then goes through the churches in Asia, what we now call Asia Minor. So Derbe, Lystra, ends up all the way up
out into Troas.
Is where he ends up going. From there, he had wanted to go into Galatia. He wanted to go in the northern region of this section. He kept being prevented from doing that. That's why he kept kind of creeping over towards the western edge. And then he finally was told that he was to go through a dream that he was being called to Macedonia. So from here, he launches up, comes up into the Macedonian area, and works his way along the coast to various towns. So he goes to Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, are all mentioned in Acts. From there, he then works his way down to taking both boat and by walking. He goes to Athens and to Corinth, which are in Caia, which is a different section. And then eventually he sails back for home. So that's basically then the second journey. Then from Acts 18:23 to chapter 21, verse 16, where we're talking about the years probably about 54 to 57, he didn't stay too long in Antioch. He takes off again. This time again, he goes with the overland route. But now we concentrate on the further cities. And so he covers Galatia. He finally gets up in that region where he wanted to go earlier. So he takes a more northern route, Phrygia, Ephesus. He preaches there for quite a while. From there he ends up in Macedonia. He goes to Troas, down to Miletus. If you notice, if you're trying to follow it, he's going up and down and working his way all over the place. There's not a nice pattern to his, maybe a figure eight going around the Aegean Sea. Then eventually goes instead of returning to Antioch of Syria, because there was a funds they were doing for a famine down Judea, he sails straight for the Judea area, lands in Tyre, and spends a little bit of time there, and then moves down to Caesarea, and then again goes to Jerusalem. So then we get to Acts chapter 21 through 28, 21 verse 17 to 28, to the end of the chapter, roughly about AD 58. He's in Jerusalem delivering the funds. He is then arrested in Jerusalem. There was mock charges brought up against him. To protect him, they bring him out of Jerusalem to Caesarea under armed guards. There he spends basically 2 years in jail waiting for release while the governors were basically waiting for a bribe that never came. So about 58 to 60 is roughly where he was spending his time in Caesarea. That's covered from Acts 23, 34 to 26, 32. There was a plan just basically to bring him back to Jerusalem to turn him over to the Jews, which would obviously lead to his death. Paul protests, says, I want to go before the governor. Because of that, then they had to ship him there. We want to go before the emperor, I should say, not governor. And so Acts 27 is about his travel by sea to go to Rome, and how he ended up being shipwrecked, and he ends up on a small island called Melita, or Malta as was commonly known now, in Acts 28 verses 1 through 15. That's probably about AD 61. And then that following year, once travel becomes good, he moves up into Italy and that region and goes to Rome. And he's in jail for 2 years. And that's where Acts ends. It's a really brief summary. Covered quite a bit of territory, covered quite a few years. Basically, like I said, we're covering about 30 years of time period. But the thing that we want to learn most about Acts is, one, about the accuracy, how much detail is given. And also to realize that this is the book that we go to when we want to learn how to convert people. Didn't spend much time talking about the various things that happen. If I did, I'd be here probably most of the night. So those are things that we want to focus on and see from that book. But we at least want to know the overall purpose of it. It's not basically a lesson to convert people to Christ, but it's to help us be able to know more about what God has told us. But if there's anyone here tonight who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than put on Christ. For those who are children of God and would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf, we always leave that opportunity available. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of selection?